Look, Europe, from what I can say, it needs an external enemy. So it has to constantly say that Putin wants to invade. Otherwise, as it crumbles, they lose their pensions and social programs. They're going to be grabbing their pitchforks and storming the parliament. It's crumbling from within. I would be surprised if it can sustain past 2030. Our computer's been warning that we're going into a recession into 2028. And it's policies like this that are causing it. So you either have civil unrest on one side, then you threw in all the migrants. And if you don't keep paying them, what do you think is going to happen there? The talk behind the scenes is that there may have been a second shooter at the Kursk thing. This is in part why Trump, after that assassination, is suddenly going Antifa, terrorist organization, going after Soros, etc. Because there are, Soros has even openly said, the United States is a problem, has to be, basically removed. These are globalist ideas. And these people think that a one world government is the solution. They're crazy.
Welcome to Discourse with Christian. I'm your host, Christian White. And today is, of course, a returning guest, Martin Armstrong, the founder of Armstrong Economics. Martin, thanks so much for carving out the time today. How you been?
Just, mesmerized watching the world go by,
As I always say, there's a lot going on around the world. I figured we'd get your latest scoop on things.
It's just, I don't know. When you look at what Trump said, he was being sarcastic in the sense that, oh, Russia's a paper tiger. You go ahead, you can take it. Ukraine can keep all its land and take more. This is what the neocons have been preaching in Europe. And it's absurd. So I think what he was saying was basically saying, fine, I'll give you all the weapons. Go ahead, have a nice time. I don't think he was really serious. I think in a way he was being very sarcastic, because I do know what these people have been saying, which is absurd. But I mean, that's NATO. NATO, in my opinion, should have been shut down, because their only purpose was against the Warsaw Pact and communism, etc. And when all that fell, what's the purpose of NATO? Its purpose is only for war. And that, so you see them trying to expand into Asia. This is to keep their jobs and their pensions. That's all it's about. Putin has absolutely no interest in invading Europe. He's been there since 1999, but they equate it like he's Khrushchev. And when Khrushchev said, we will bury you, it wasn't for economic reasons, like I'm going to conquest and I'm going to get all the assets you have or something like that. He was a real believer in Marxism. He really believed that communism was this new, utopia, and capitalism was evil. And so it was philosophical to him. And my concern is that these neocons never, ever, ever change their agenda. It's always the same nonsense. And like I said, I was in D.C. when Reagan went to go meet Gorbachev. And what I was told then, neocons were all up in arms about it. They couldn't call him a communist, so they said you can just never trust a Russian. If I'm Putin, I really don't want to sign a peace deal, because I know these people are not really interested in peace. This has got nothing to do with Ukraine. This is about the conquest of Russia, period. And it always has been. You can look at Robert McNamara before he died. It's on YouTube. I think he was clearing his conscience. He said, took us into Vietnam. He says, we thought Russia was involved. We were wrong. It was just a civil war. Fine. 58,000 Americans died for what? Strip joints in Vietnam, boogeyman in Russia all the time. And okay, that was legitimate. You're talking about all the Red Scares from the 20s and, and McCarthy era, and it's communism. But communism fell all by itself. It's inefficient. I think these guys, they didn't change their mind. And I think they're just pissed off that they didn't get to shoot anybody. there was no war for them to actually, they spent their whole lives dreaming about war, And it had Lindsey Graham, I put the tape on my site. He was saying, he was in a meeting with Zelensky saying, this is the best money we ever spent to kill Russians. I mean, if you said that, best money we ever spent to kill Islam or blacks, that's a hate crime. They throw you in prison for that. But Russians, it's okay. That's what I mean. Lindsey Graham is just one of the neocons that doesn't matter what Russia does, never changes mind. So hopefully in this generation checks out. Maybe the next one won't be so crazy. Hard to say. And people should understand. I mean, I grew up in the Philadelphia area, so I know Netanyahu went to school in Philly. Most people don't know that. And he hung out with the family of Bill Kristol. And it was Bill Kristol's father, Irving, who taught at Penn, who started the whole neocon movement. So Netanyahu is, dyed in the wool, a neocon. And I don't think Trump got rid of Victoria Nuland and John Bolton, but I don't think he realized that Netanyahu was in with the same crowd. And that, he's a head of state, so that's different or something, I guess. He did have to step in and say, no, you cannot assassinate the Ayatollah. I mean, people don't realize that the Shiite, he's like the Pope of that sect. And about 35% in general of the populations of Egypt and Saudi Arabia are all Shiite. So it would be kind of like, a Protestant assassinating, the Pope. You know what I mean? You really want to do something like that? You're going to create an awful lot of civil unrest. There's just certain things you don't do. And so it's just, I'm cautious with Netanyahu. Like to see if this peace for Gaza really is, honestly going to work out. I'm not a great proponent of Netanyahu. I think he's done serious damage to the Jewish community, where you have more of this rising anti-Semite type thing. Or really because of him, protests on the campuses and stuff like that. That's the stuff that gets, percolates into something else, like in Germany. It started with some fraud in the Weimar Republic and, that involved Jews, and then they got angry with that, and then, you know, it turned into a conspiracy that the Trotsky was Jewish, so all of a sudden communism turned into a Jewish conspiracy. You know, and then it just takes on its own life, you know. And everybody's involved. So you just got to be careful of that kind of stuff.
Well, I completely agree with you. I think it's what the Israeli government has done has really hurt people in the Jewish community and such. And unfortunately, everybody gets put into that same camp, so to speak, in some regards. And I couldn't agree with you more in terms of making that distinction. As it relates to, since we've mentioned Netanyahu, what do you think will ultimately befall him? I mean, do you think he'll just continue to carry on, you know, his agenda, so to speak? Do you think he's going to be overthrown? How does it impact the geopolitical world?
I mean, eventually, I think he may be overthrown, but I think that's also maybe too little, too late, but. Look, I mean, even from Russia looking at the United States, they see the people like Lindsey Graham. And that can be interpreted as all Americans hate Russians. You know what I mean? You know, not everybody's worldly or really, no matter what country you go to, there's always people that approve of the government and those that are against it, no matter what it is. So, you know, you can't throw everybody in one pot. It's just simply not, you know, going to be it. And things do change. I mean, like most of the Americans that came here from Europe got away from all that bitter nonsense. So that's why they, you know, FDR couldn't get us into World War II. You know, Congress would not issue a declaration of war, not until Pearl Harbor. When they got that in, then people signed up. Okay. But before then, no way. In fact, I had seen a documentary of a speech where FDR had gone to Boston trying to, you know, get people to support that he could send troops. And of course, Boston is mostly Irish. And they said, "You really expect us to send our boys to defend Britain after what they did to Ireland?" You know, so this was the problem they had. And that's what made America more isolationist. That most of the Europeans that came here wanted to get away from all that crazy stuff over there. I've been dealing with Europe for a long time. I've been going there since I was like 13. I mean, back and forth. And look, if a French girl brings home a German and says, "Dad, I want to marry him," he's going to say, "You do know what they did to us, you know?" It's just things live on forever there. I mean, I've said, I was called in by Yugoslavia before it all broke up, and they tell me, you know, they killed 600 of us and threw us in a common grave, and I'm thinking I missed something on the news. Really? Oh my God, when did that happen? Oh, about 700 years ago. I said, "Oh, okay, that one," you know? They just hang on to these things for a very long time. They don't disappear. We had opened an office in 85 back in London in Plantation House, which is where the LME was. And I remember being in the office of the economist and said to me, "Oh, really? You know, that place has a bit of a reputation." I said, "Really? What?" "Oh, somebody absconded with some money and ran off to South America." I said, "Really? When did this happen?" "Oh, about 120 years ago, you know." So it's just, you know, it's just the way it goes. It's Europe, they remember everything. It just goes on and on. And I think it's the language that keeps it in check like that. And like I said, when they're forming the Euro, they came to me and I sat down in 98. I said, you don't know what made America great. And I said, what? I said, discrimination. I said, oh my God, how can you say that? I said, because it was fair. Whoever was the last off the boat didn't get a job until they spoke English. I said, so today you ask an American, what are you? Go, I'm half Irish, half German, half Italian, whatever. You know, I said, everybody intermarried once they spoke the same language. In Europe, yeah, there's some, very few, you know, somebody from Scotland's not going to go down and marry somebody from Sicily. I mean, they don't even talk the same language. And the cultures are different, things of this nature. So it's, I think that's what keeps everybody apart over there. I mean, I was the keynote speaker for the BIS conference, which was in Paris. And they had, so I sat at the head table with all the heads of the central banks of Europe. And the French host next to me was absolutely livid because the table started speaking English. But it was the one language everybody knew. German couldn't speak Italian, you know. The one language everybody had was English. And it was, oh, this is Paris. They should be speaking French. You know, I've done a lot in France, been called into some of the major companies there, told to bring an interpreter. And when you're talking finance, you have to really pay attention because a bull market can turn into a meat market. Because a lot of times you just get somebody, they don't know all the terms. And so I had it at this one meeting. I had a stopper and corrector, and they looked at me and said, oh, you know what she's saying? I said, well, I'm not a complete idiot. Then they dismiss her and the meeting takes place in English. It's as long as I could understand some French, it's okay. Then they can do the English. But if I don't understand anything, no, then it's got to be translators. Very arrogant that way. And I think, honestly, I think some are just resentful that Napoleon lost at Waterloo, and if had he won, the world would be speaking French instead of English. I think that's the way they look at it.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. I'm going off on a tangent here. Right? Well, you know, as far as Europe goes, I mean, the myriad of countries that you have, and the national identities. I mean, despite, you know, currency like the EU and things of that nature existing. But to your point, you know, I was actually reading about the rise of nationalism in the 19th century. And, you know, of course, you saw more the rise of the modern state versus these myriad of different, states, if you will. It is very fascinating, kind of the character and makeup of the continent of Europe and such. And as it relates to Europe, and as it relates to Trump's speech, so to speak, at the UN. And, I know you alluded to kind of, you know, the paper tiger comment and such. Where are we at currently as it relates to, you know, things further escalating, things that you're reading, and as it relates to your blogs and things of that nature?
Well, I have made my concerns known in Capitol Hill. And I, the response was, look, peace is still on the table. Very nice. But I keep warning them that we're going to get the hell out of NATO. We're going to do a false flag. Poland was one. Economically, Europe is crumbling from the inside. and say, you heard of the England and France finance ministers hinting that they may need an IMF bailout. Europe is highly regulated socialistically. And, you know, between COVID, lockdowns, then the climate change nonsense, and then the sanctions on Russia. The German economy is has shrunk at least 3%, maybe up to 5%. So I'm talking about the number of possible jobs available. Then you have these migrants, all right? And I find it interesting that Merz just came out to criticize the EU about these socialistic, you know, these social programs or ideas diverting away from economics. Because this is a recipe for total disaster. And you don't bring in immigration during an economic decline. You can look it up when all the Irish were coming in 1844, and the 1840s was a depression. And what happened, there were gun battles on the streets of Philadelphia. Because somebody coming in, okay, you're getting $10 an hour, I'll do it for $8. You know, and so, you know, the people that were here saw the immigrants as taking their jobs. It's not a good recipe. And this is where Europe is. I was on the phone with Romania, and they were just ordered by the EU to accept 100,000 migrants. Nope, they don't care what language they speak. Do they have any trade whatsoever? I mean, this is absurd. You know, and they really think that they can draft these people, hand them a gun, and send them to war with Russia. Good luck. I mean, they're not there to fight for the dignity of Russia. They're there for a free lunch. And if you expect them to pay for it with their life, not going to happen. I'd be very careful about what policies they do, but look, I mean, Europe is, it's crumbling from within. I would be surprised if it can sustain past 2030. I mean, you even have Merz coming out now. For Germany, which is 25% of the whole economy. You see them, you know, oh, they have to have electric cars. You see tens of thousands of people protesting at, you know, at Volkswagen, you know, about losing their jobs and stuff. It's like whatever the worst possible economic decision they could have made, they've done in spades. It's pathetic. So I'm not very optimistic. Look, Europe, from what I can say, it needs an external enemy. So it has to constantly say that Putin wants to invade. Otherwise, as it crumbles, they lose their pensions and social programs. They're going to be grabbing their pitchforks and storming the parliaments. So you either have civil unrest on one side, then you threw in all the migrants. And if you don't keep paying them, what do you think is going to happen there? So honestly, it's like whatever stupid decision they could have made, they did absolutely perfect. And I think that's what Trump's statement was. It was a sarcastic statement in that, go ahead, Russia's a paper tiger, because that's what NATO was telling them, is that they have 3.4 million troops, Russia has 1.5. So we can just walk in, take Russia. Putin will drop to his knees and beg for forgiveness. I don't think so. They know this is a war to destroy Russia. This is not to push them out of Ukraine. And you're talking about driving a stake through the heart of Russia. You had Kalis, who's now the number two over there in the EU government. And she's openly said that Russia is too big and needs to be broken up. What if Putin said that about the United States? Or, you know, Europe? They were, oh, that's outrageous. But it's okay for her to say that against, you know, Russia. So from their perspective, if I'm Putin, I know they're coming for me. I mean, they've made it so obvious. And I think that's what Trump said. Oh, Russia's a paper tiger. You think you can go take them? All right. Yes, Ukraine, you can keep all your land and go get some from Russia. Realistically? Mm-mm. So that's why I think it was more sarcasm, but I know that's what the neocons have been saying over there. So I think he's just repeating it and shoving it down their throat. My concern is that what I've warned them about is we got to get the hell out of NATO because they will do a false flag to invoke Article 5 and try and embarrass Trump into sending troops there. And this 3.4 million they keep bragging about includes the United States and Canada. It's not just European. So I don't, you know, that's my view. I don't see where this is in the national security of the United States at all. And you want peace, as I've said about Rome, but even look at Alexander the Great. All right. Persia had all kinds of tariffs and restrictions and on trade, etc. Alexander the Great wasn't an economist, and there's no decree outlawing all of that. But once he conquered everything, it was all gone. So it wasn't like it was maybe what you would call an unintended consequence, I guess. But that's what made the Hellenistic world economically boom. All of a sudden, everybody had the same currency. They could trade with each other without restrictions and tariffs and things of this nature. And it boomed. And that's why, like, Alexandria that, you know, he built in Egypt, the library was supposed to be the greatest library ever in human history. It was just an economic boom by allowing free trade. That's your recipe for peace, not sanctions. You basically encourage free trade with Russia, and then what will happen? Their economy will expand, and those people will provide the check and balance against their own government. What, you want war? I'm out of business. You know, knock this stuff off. Like Americans, we're not interested in going and invading and occupying Russia or China. I mean, most people just want to go along and just take care of their families and go from day to day. It tends to be more of these theoretical people in the upper echelons that think war is like a, I don't know, a football game or something. I mean, just look at Louis the, the sun god Louis, when he, on his deathbed, he lamented. He says, I think I have loved war too much. And he attacked just about everybody. That's actually behind our Second Amendment. Because there was a general Savoy, and he was interviewed by Montesquieu, and Montesquieu's work is what influenced our founding fathers. And he was a general who fought many wars for the kings of Europe. And he told Montesquieu that these kings have these standing armies. They pay a lot of money for them. And they get bored because you see all this money going out, but they're not doing anything. So he said, go attack this. Get my money out of something, you know. And so his comment to Montesquieu was that standing armies were the problem, because then kings tend to use them. And that's behind the Second Amendment. That more like Switzerland, where, okay, fine, everybody has a gun in their house. Mainly, they had to go do their training in the military, then they went home. But if somebody invaded, then they all come out with their guns, a militia. That's what the Second Amendment was really about. And people don't understand it, but if you don't have guns, you can't rise up against tyranny, can you? So there's a double-edged sword and all this stuff, but it was Savoy who told Montesquieu, and that was what the whole Second Amendment's about.
Savoy, now, are you talking about Prince Eugene of Savoy? Is that who you're referencing?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I know we were talking offline about that period. I know we're deviating here from a moment from the economics and stuff, but it ties in. It's so fascinating because, Martin, you talk about, so there he is. I've been reading about the Habsburg Empire. It is, but I'll have to take a look into that because I was not aware of that, and I'm intrigued.
Yeah,
by,
he
Eugene's
he
campaigns.
Was interviewed by Montesquieu.
Did not know that. And as it relates to, you mentioned about war and desire, right, for countries. And I've been reading a bit about the Sun King and such, and it is interesting how that desire for glory, right, amongst the nobility and such. And it's unfortunate when you think about even today, where your average Joe, if you will, to your point, just wants to get on with their life. But you have called the modern day nobility, if you will, they the neocons and things of that nature. They want the glory. They live in this this bubble, divorced from reality, more or less. And unfortunately, everybody else has to succumb to that their desires and get killed and such. And it's just it's fascinating.
If you look at the Biden administration, one thing that bothered me was you had Victoria Nuland, you had Blinken, Tony Blinken, and Garland. Look all three up. All three claimed that their families were from the Ukraine area, and all three claimed that their families were persecuted by Russia. I felt, okay, one, three in the same administration? All neocons? No, I'm sorry. This is, I think they aspired to that position to hate Russia and create something for family vindictiveness or something. I really don't know. I just find it very curious. How could three people with the same historical background end up in the same administration? How they weasel their way in there.
I think I do remember you mentioning that, and it is fascinating how people will draw back on something historical as a legitimacy or as a foundation from which to substantiate their position or so on and so forth. Okay. So obviously we've covered Europe here a bit. How about segueing over to Asia? If you have any thoughts on that, and then at some point, if, you know, Venezuela, things of that nature that we're hearing in the news.
Well, I think the neocons basically have instigated that as well. Before the Biden administration, we had agreed to what was called the One China policy. And that was basically saying that Taiwan was really part of China. Okay. And you have to understand Asian culture. As long as we said that, then it's fine. They don't need to invade. All right. When you got Pelosi over there, you're independent, stand up, go. Now you have to. They were kind of like pissing in China's face at that point. For what reason? You know, I mean, you're looking at from, you know, basically 1950 on, China didn't go in. All right. They're really part of us, whatever. Chiang Kai-shek during the revolution fled to Taiwan. All right. It was just an acknowledgement. And it's okay. They didn't have to do anything. But when you start doing this, Asia has this cultural issue of saving face. All right. When people say, oh, they're communists. They're not communists. And I said, just look up what communism is. All right. Communism is when the government owns all the property. I think there's more billionaires in Russia and China than there are in America. All right. Why do they still call it, you know, communists? And I said, don't you understand Asia? If they change the name, they then have to admit that Mao was wrong and have to take down his picture from the Forbidden City and discredit him. So they just leave it alone, okay? They're not communists. They didn't change the name. It's all part of the saving face thing. Communism fell with Tiananmen Square, period. And I mean, we have an office in China. We have staff. They can freely come here to our conference and back and forth, whatever. Couldn't do that in the communist era. So, I mean, you know, you have to understand also the culture of different places. It's more than, I'll give you an example. It's a funny one, but the city of Philadelphia, William Penn, he looked up the word Philadelphia from ancient Greek. And what did it mean? It meant brotherly love. So they say, city of brotherly love. However, he didn't understand the culture. He didn't understand what it meant. Look up Ptolemy, I think the second or third, and they give him the title Philadelphius. What did it mean? Incest. He married his sister. Brotherly love. Not quite the Christian version, right? But if you didn't know your Greek, as William Penn did, oh, brotherly love. Yes, I love my brother, like out of the Bible. Not the same thing. You got to know the context. Before you start, you know, every culture is a bit different and they think differently, etc. So you have to understand that. Japan, how you bow according to rank. So you'll see a girl and she'll go all the way down like 90 degrees and you get to the very highest level and it's just a head nod. That's it. You bow according to rank. So, I mean, you know, you go to Germany and they'll kiss you on each side of the cheek. You go to Switzerland, just two. Where's the third? Choose bad luck. You know, it's so everybody's got their own thing. And that's what makes the world interesting and fascinating. I mean, I've lived everywhere from, you know, Zurich and London and through Europe and Hong Kong, Thailand, Japan. I mean, so I found it interesting, you know, living in different places, you get to learn all the different cultures.
Well, you know, as it relates to Europe and in light of, you know, what seems like more and more, you know, potential kinetic NATO to Russia, you know, direct on action, I've actually have pondered on the idea of visiting Europe before anything, you know, crazy happens and such, to go check out some spots, and that are long overdue.
Better hurry up.
okay. Oh boy. All right. I guess that's a sign right there.
You also have to keep in mind that when war starts, flights shut down, things of that nature, you might have to get a paddle boat to get home, you know?
Or I might just have to settle someplace. Maybe somewhere in Southern Europe, which I have fantasized about a little bit, but, how about over in Venezuela? You know, any comments on escalations over there, things of that nature?
Not really. Look, I mean, that's Trump on the whole drug issues. I guess going after Venezuela is more palatable than going after Mexico, I suppose. That would be invading Mexico, and the head of state over there said, no way are you coming in here. So it's that I think would be much more problematic. But I mean, this is where Trump goes off, I think, on a tangent. You know, what he's done. All right, I think everybody agreed, all these illegal aliens coming in, they had no trade, nothing. Just being taken care of. Friends in Austin saying, you know, people are getting robbed, walking in the mall and stabbed, stuff like that. All right, that's basically what got him elected. However, now it's going completely nuts. $100,000 to, you know, application fee for a visa. And that's why you see massive people leaving, Indians and stuff. I mean, lining up at the airports to get out. Why? Because it's, you pay $100,000 and it's not a guarantee you get it. And I have one employee that's been with me at least from since 2011. And he was coming here, no problem. Then all of a sudden they don't let him in. Why? We don't have to tell you. Our prerogative. All right. And you look at this new visa fee, $100,000 to make the application. Not a guarantee you get it. So honestly, it's a crime. $100,000 to file an application. And chances are, because of this Trump administration, no, denied. And I don't have to tell you why. Screw you. That reminds me, I went to the Berlin Wall before it fell. And you were forced to convert West German marks to East German. Then you got into town, and nobody would take the East German marks, as they knew you were from the West. No, that price is West German marks. So you're really spending West German marks in the East because they didn't want the East themselves. Then you go to leave and you got the same amount of East German marks in your pocket that you were forced to exchange. Then they confiscate it. And they said, here, here's a slip. I said, don't you give me my money back? Oh, no, we don't. We only confiscate here. Okay. You want your money back, you have to go to the central bank in town, which is closed. So then you go back in town, stay overnight again, go through all this shit. And I just said to him, and you people say you're not capitalists? Yeah, right. just shake you down. That's it. And that's what I see the Trump administration doing here. This $100,000 fee basically is telling the rest of the world, get the hell out. Only Americans here. Our computer's been warning that we're going into a recession into 2028. And it's policies like this that are causing it. We have our conferences. I used to do one in Asia, one in Europe, one here. And after COVID, didn't travel. So we're only doing one in Orlando. And then we started streaming. And now we stream hundreds of thousands to like 37 countries. Because a lot of people, you know, can't come here. Others don't want to come here. And so I sent off to Washington. I said, well, you can take your policy and shove it where the sun doesn't shine. All right. This will be my last conference in the United States, period. All right. Only outside the United States from now on. And will I hire anybody? It's going to be outside the United States. All right. It's just, you're doing they're forcing me out of the country. We're a multinational company. We've got offices from China to UAE. You need people in these different areas because they know the culture, they speak the language. It can't be all just Americans running everything in the world. Sorry, you have to have somebody on the ground who understands what's going on. And that's vital sources to me as well, you know, because they understand the culture, they understand what's going on. One staff member from Germany said, hey, you know, personal friends that were 60 years old were told suddenly to report for military duty. 60 years old. All right. So I can, you know, by having staff around the world, and we have every race, creed, India, Chinese, European, I mean, we all get along. We're like a mini UN ourselves, and the difference is that everybody's of the same mindset. That, you know, be careful with government, you know, and so everybody looks at it from that perspective. That's why they're here. All right. So we're not, you know, they're not biased about only invest in India or something like that. I mean, that's, you know, absurd. Everybody understands we're all in this together.
Amen to that. And then I guess lastly, of course, before I, you know, have you share with the audience how they can learn more about you and such, you know, potential civil strife and such, more so in the U.S., obviously, we're seeing a lot of stuff going on over in Europe, the U.K., things of that nature. Obviously, in the wake of Kirk's assassination, any commentary or any thoughts on things escalating or such here domestically?
The talk behind the scenes is that there may have been a second shooter at the Kirk thing. This is in part why Trump, after that assassination, is suddenly going and you know, Antifa, terrorist organization, going after Soros, etc. Because there are Soros has even openly said the United States is a problem, has to be, you know, basically removed. These are globalist ideas. And these people think that a one world government is the solution. They're crazy. I even have a tape on our site. You can look up the former president of France, Holland, standing in parliament with Merkel and saying the whole purpose of the EU is one government to stop war. And it's bullshit. You know, because then, okay, fine. All I hear from Europe is, when is the EU going to fold? Because they've interfered in everybody's culture. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. I'm telling you. And, you know, where, you know, you're the one that's actually reigniting all the differences between countries. Same thing's going on here in America. I mean, the country's extremely divided. I believe the curse may have been an intentional thing to further expand that. And this is why Trump is going after Soros and the rest of them, because there is a clear agenda. If you create the civil unrest, you divide a country and it will fall. And they think then they get to ride into a ticker tape parade and join just the one world government and we'll save you. You know, it's look, I know some of these people. I think most of them are academics. Just look up the World Economic Forum's 2030 agenda. I put the video on our site in case you can't find it, but in there he says, you know, democracy's done. They take the philosophy of Aristotle, Socrates, and Plato that they were against democracy because the people were too stupid to understand, and you really needed somebody with some experience at the head of, you know, head of the class. That's why we ended up with a republic and not a democracy. Democracy is when you vote. Do we go to war with Russia? Yes or no? They don't ask us. In a republic, they make the decisions. Oh, but they represent us, you see. That's the nonsense. So that's what the EU was created on. Look up Ursula. She has never stood for an election for anything. Not even class president or class clown. All right. She's appointed to everything that she has. The people that make the laws in the EU, not elected. Look up the details of the parliament. It's all, you know, a dog and pony show. Oh, you elect your parliament. Very nice. The parliament has no power to write a law. It's all done in the back room. They deliberately created a government to thwart any possibility that the people might vote them out. The solution, whatever government has done this, the only solution, if you can't vote them out, is revolution. That's the civil unrest you will see. You know, it's the same thing in the United States. I mean, I'm in Florida. I don't even want to go to California. California, to me, just looks like a completely foreign, you know, entity anymore. You know, it's, they take your children away if they think the child maybe wants to be a transgender. Then it's child abuse to deny your child anything along those lines. I mean, come on. So in other words, you're doing the same thing as Stalin did. Stalin told the state's your parent, not your biological parents. And if they dare say anything against the state, report them. That's what they were taught in school. That's what California's doing. They always lead in the same direction. And the problem with these governments, whenever you get a centralized government and they start to lose power, they become more authoritarian. So California, instead of saying, gee, why is everybody leaving? What are we doing wrong? No, what do they say? Let's put an exit tax to punish these bastards for leaving. Look at England, putting a mandatory ID on your phone so they can listen to every phone call. And gee, if you say something that is hate speech, and what is hate speech? Gave a guy 22 months in prison for saying, I'm tired of my money going to migrants who rape our kids. 22 months in prison for saying that. Arrested another guy. Oh, it's hate speech because he didn't understand somebody. He says, do you speak English? Oh, that's hate speech. Another one walking around with the British flag. What? I mean, Starmer's going completely nuts. Completely nuts. I was asked if I would come over for a meeting to Britain. I said, nope. Sorry, we'll no longer go there. I said, he'll probably arrest me for something I said 10 years ago. You know, not interested. There is no free speech left in Europe. Zero. And that's what I mean. They know they are collapsing. And the more they know they're collapsing, the more authoritarian they get to try and retain power. If everything was fat and happy, everybody's happy, you don't need this kind of stuff. We never had this in my lifetime. Why do we have it now? Because they're in trouble. And even in UK, the finance minister even said, we may have to ask the IMF for a bailout loan. Gee, how about that? What does that say? Read between the lines. If they have to ask the IMF for a bailout, that means they can't sell their debt. What did I say? All countries fail when you're in these Ponzi schemes. It's not the empirical level of debt. We could have 50 quadrillion. The question is when the line at the door is no longer there to buy the next tranche. If you can't sell the new debt, then you can't pay off the old. And it doesn't matter what we're talking about. You know, 1 billion, a trillion, 20 trillion, 100 trillion, that's irrelevant. Throughout history, that's happened. You know, you can look up the city of Mainz in Germany. It's where the Gutenberg press was. The same story is like Detroit. All right. All the auto companies are there. Oh, wow, this is great. Kept raising taxes. They all left. Detroit ended up in bankruptcy in 1937. Okay. They chased everybody out. The city of Mainz, it's where Gutenberg press was. Even Gutenberg himself left. All right. Raising taxes. We'll get the rich. That's a good one. All right. Oh, we're only going to tax the rich. How do I know you're not rich? You still have to file a paper to tell me you're not. And what's criminal? Oh, the failure to file is criminal. I can't put you in jail because you didn't pay your taxes. I'll put you in jail like Al Capone, all right, for not telling me you owe it. You know, it's... So, that's the... As soon as they say they're going to tax the rich, better zip up your pockets because they're coming for you. They started that 1913, only going to go after the rich. By World War II, we had payroll taxes. All right. And then when I was in New Jersey, my father's old law partner said, if you die here, tell your family to drag your body across the river before they tell anybody. They want 50% of what you have while you're working, then 40% of what's left. You know? So I moved to Florida. All right. Got the hell out. It's just, look, it's all about culture. Once they start, they're just leftists, and leftists will always grab more and more money. There was a leftist politician in Vancouver. I was just dumbfounded. She actually said, everything you earn belongs to the state. They decide how much you're allowed to keep. Interesting view. Here in Florida, they just got a bill going up to the state to abolish property taxes. You have a balanced budget. No income tax. How can we do all this down here where you can't get anything done in New Jersey, New York, Connecticut? I mean, the corruption is just so pervasive. And they always run out. Just raise the taxes. Instead of reform, raise more taxes. That's it. Somebody's lived their whole life. They bought a house for maybe $15,000 in the 50s, and now it's worth, $300,000. Oh, look at that. You're rich. this is why they're going after the, property taxes here. It's one thing fortunate about Florida is that we have a lot of retired people here. And that's really good because there are check and balance against the government. But they'd have to change the Constitution to get an income tax in, and not going to happen.
Well, fascinating conversation that we had, and I'm just reminded of because you and I both really enjoy history. Not to sound all cliche, but just so many of so many similar things. Things, credit, wars, social class. I mean, it is really fascinating. Martin, how can people learn more about you, get in touch with you?
Just go to armstrongeconomics.com. You don't have to put in any emails. We don't sell advertising. It's completely open. To basically provide a platform for free speech. It's our main objective, to at least tell the truth. And we're not partisan one way or another. If Trump does something good, I say yes. If Trump does something bad, I say no. there's no room for partisan because we're global. So it can't be, partisan just for one side all the time. There are shades of gray to both sides.
Well, I'll comment also on this since you mentioned that. That's something that I have found in the myriad of different guests that I've had on is and to include my thought on the other side of the spectrum politically is that I guess the truth is, to your point, somewhere kind of in the middle, more or less. And anyhow, everyone's got their different approach on things. But Marty, appreciate your time. Be well. And I'll always enjoy hearing your thoughts. So thank you for carving out the time.
Well, thank you for inviting me. And take care, Chris.
You as well. Quick ask, over half of you who watch the show regularly haven't yet subscribed. If you've enjoyed the show, you're finding value in it, subscribing is really the best way to support the channel. It's, of course, free. It literally takes 2 seconds, and it lets the algorithm know that this content matters. And of course, my commitment to you is going to be that I'm going to continue to bring on great guests, refine those questions. And of course, I'm always receptive to your feedback. If there's certain people that you'd like to have on or certain questions or this, that, and the other that you'd like to have as part of, the show going forward, things of that nature, please let me know. I'm pretty easy to access. Anyhow, that's my commitment to you. If you can subscribe, that would mean a lot. Thanks.